song we sang, "This World Is Not My Home." That's a hard thing for teenagers to even have the remotest thought about. I'm not being critical, because I sure didn't. "This World Is Not My Home," number 27. And when I was a teenager, I had football, baseball, girls. I had everything in the world on my mind except heaven. And I never, ever thought about heaven. I was saved when I was 12, but this world was my home. And all my thoughts for future, all of them. And I was thinking about girls. Then I met Emma King. My thoughts were about her getting married. I had a lot of thoughts about a lot of things. And then we got married and started having kids. And all my thoughts were on my assignments that I was going to be going to, and kids and everything. This world was my home. The only home I knew. And I never thought about heaven. Never. And whenever the Holy Spirit would bother me enough, why, I'd go to church. But this was my home right here. I've often wondered if it would have been possible for me at that young age to start thinking about heaven. And I've got an answer to that, because I've watched Chuck Thrusty, and I've watched Summer, and I've watched some young men in the ministry and their families, and they think about heaven a lot. So I guess I'd have to say I goofed. But I'm just thankful that all of a sudden around age 38, it dawned on me that this really isn't my home. If you had asked me, I would have told you yes, that my home was up there. But it really wasn't. I didn't have any thoughts about anything except this life. And it never crossed my mind that I was going to be somewhere else for 1,000 years and then for all eternity. I was so caught up in life, and I'm not the Lone Ranger. I think that fits most of you. And you just get so caught up in life itself that you don't ever think about things that are going to dominate your future, which lasts forever. This world is not my home. Well, it's pretty easy for me now. And it's not just because I've grown older. It's because I really believe everything in that Bible. The horrible thing is, when I was a teenager, I didn't much care what was in that Bible. I had been saved, and what I cared about was my life here. All my thoughts were on it. The only time I'd ever think about God is when I heard a message that convicted me of my sin. And then this song we sang right after, "It's a Haven of Rest," it goes a lot to do with the message tonight. It's called "A Haven of Rest." The night I got saved, I had tremendous rest. And I've had that time of rest for a long time, because as soon as I learned to carry the believer, I didn't have to worry about going to hell anymore. But you know, Emma Jean, we had a lot of troubles and trials and things that we never did really get the rest that comes in serving God. It wasn't your fault, it was mine. And I didn't really start getting that kind of rest till I was about 38. But I think when I did Bill's funeral, and we had the song, "The Haven of Rest," we didn't sing that when I first came here to this church, but we started. And every time I'd come down to that one section of that song, "I've anchored my soul in the heaven haven of rest. I'll sail the wild seas no more." I think about you, Kenneth. I think about you out running all those cop cars. I think about you. You were one wing dinger, weren't you? And he sailed the wild seas. I don't know much about Bill's youth, but I just transferred that over to Bill. I doubt Bill may have had a very plastic youth. And I transferred it over to me. I don't want to tell you about what it was like in North Africa. I've never told him, and he never will. But brother, I was wild. And when I used to outrun every police car in Little Rock. Had a strip down, 35 Ford. So stripped down, didn't even have brakes on the steering wheel. Had high-speed aluminum head. I could let nobody catch me. And I didn't have any protection at all. Every time I think about that, I'll sail the wild seas no more. You know, it's a shame you have to get to be an old man before you can look back all that and realize how foolish you were. I made a lot of bad decisions when I was young. And the reason I made a lot of bad decisions is because I let my fleshly heart and the things that it controls control me. It's nice being an old man. It's real nice. Because I really have entered the haven of rest. And I not only have the rest of assurance of salvation, but I've got the rest of assurance of a future home. Still have trouble, still have some problems, but funny how minuscule they seem to be. Now, a rejected son returns as a rod to bring peace to us. This is part three of this series of messages. I've covered part two. And this is part three. And it's really an exposition of the 11th chapter of Isaiah, starting out in verse 1 and going through the chapter. A rejected son returns as a rod to bring peace to us. This is part three. Isaiah 11, 1 and 4 runs the gauntlet from the time of his first arrival in a manger in Bethlehem to his smiting the earth with the rod of his mouth at his second advent, to its bringing in the peace of the millennial reign. Is that something that's a long, 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 long way off? Is that something that, you know, do you ever think about that? Or are your thoughts just here all the time? Everybody can't sit around all the time and think about this. You've got things you have to do. And I realize God certainly doesn't mean for you to think about it all the time. But do you ever think about it to the extent that it directs your conduct, that it directs what you do in God's sight? Does it ever direct you to what's right and what's wrong? "And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and the branch shall grow out of his roots. But with righteousness shall he judge the poor, and reprove with equity for the beasts of the earth. And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked." That sounds like some pretty bad stuff. And it is. And used to, when I would read that, and when I would hear it, I didn't hear it much. Man, I'd read that and I'd think, look at that. "And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked." This is talking about when he comes back again. I have a rest now that I didn't used to have. That doesn't bother me at all. Oh, I feel sorry for the people that are still here. But I'm going to be with him. Have you ever thought about being here? Have you ever thought about actually being with him? What's it going to be like? Do you believe the Bible? Do you believe the Bible? What's it going to be like When you go up before the judgment seat of Christ, before this happens, what's it going to be like? You see, I never think of that. Well, I didn't either. But I could have. Right now in your life, can you think of anything that needs to change? Can you think of anything that you're doing that God indicates you shouldn't do? Does it bother you? How will you feel when you come before the judgment seat? That's something you really have to think. You don't have to think about it. You can dismiss it. You can just put it off if you want. And a lot of people do, particularly when you're young. This generation has a greater rebellion in their spirit than any generation I've ever encountered. They don't like preaching. Most of the young people don't like me because I preach the Bible. And one day, when they stand before the judgment seat of Christ, they're really seriously going to wish that they had paid attention to the things that God had to tell them from His Word. Why doesn't that bother me? Does it bother you? There's two ways that it won't bother you. Either you believe you're going to be with Him when He comes back, and then you shouldn't be concerned about all this because you'll be coming down as He comes back. And all this terrible things He's doing on the earth, you won't be down there to receive it. So you can be at rest that way. Or you can be at rest if you don't believe this. If you don't really think that God's going to do this, and you don't believe the Bible, and somebody just makes you come to church because you have to, and you have to drool through all this no matter what, well, you have a certain rest. You just take your bad feelings out about the person that you think is causing it. And you tell lies about the person, and you cover up your own sin. A lot of interesting things are going to happen. And there are some things that we all ought to think about, certainly including myself. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountains. That's millennial reign. How will you feel not to have a carnal nature? What will it be like not to have a desire for a boy? What will it be like not to have a desire for a girl? What will it be like not to crave attention and recognition and praise? What will it be like not to have to comb yourself up and make yourself look pretty? What will it be like not having to conform so your peers will accept you? What will that be like? Well, I can tell you one thing. It'll be wonderful. You won't have a carnal nature anymore. You'll have a glorified nature. What kind of a glorified nature will you have? See this little thing up here? My goodness gracious, when I was growing up, I wanted girls to think I was Mr. It. And I put gray streak down. That was temporary. I had a 28-inch waist. And man, I just wanted to be something, because I wanted to be attractive to girls. So you never experienced that, did you, Kenneth? The rest of you fellas, you never went through that. Well, I'll tell you something. When I get to heaven, I won't be concerned about any of that. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Now, it's all over. It's finished. Your life's done. You've raised your grandchild. Good old Charlie, he's not your husband anymore. Big Bird's not your wife anymore. It's all over. Everything you hold dear is gone. So, what you going to be doing for 1,000 years? Well, who cares? Who cares? Do you care? You ever think about it? You say, well, I'll cross that road when it gets to it. 1,000 years is a long road. You won't have your boyfriend. You won't have your girlfriend. You won't have all these things down here that attract you. You won't have movies. You won't have dances. You won't have football games. Sounds terrible, doesn't it? Sounds great to me. You won't have baseball games. What's your favorite thing? When you hang out, what's your favorite thing? You won't have that anymore. Hurt? Why does it hurt? Aren't we just supposed to pass through here? Well, in that day, there shall be a root of Jesse which shall stand for an ensign of the people. To it shall his rest be glory. No more worrying about church members. I speak for myself. No more worrying about watching young people destroy themselves. I won't have that anymore. No more being concerned about the church members that wear their feelings on their shirt sleeves. I won't have that anymore. No more being concerned about what you personally think of me or what I personally think of you. Gone forever. And there I am with the Lord. Now, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward when I won't have to guard every word I say because I know of your tender feelings. I'm looking forward to being there with Christ for 1,000 years. What kind of job is he going to give me? What kind of a job did I do for him here? Now, this is very personal. And if you say, who are you talking to? I'm talking to you. Each one of you. No exception. Of course, I'm not talking to Rachel. Rachel's perfect. But what are you going to do? You say, well, I don't care. You care what you're going to do tomorrow. Did you want to come here tonight? Or did you come here because it was expected? Why did you come? And when you get to heaven, does all this matter to you? Is it real? Is it real to you? Or is it just something that you have to sit and listen until I finally shut up? Believe me, I understand how you feel. Back when this world was my home and I was just passing through, I was made to go to church. I didn't like it either. And I didn't like having them make me do things that I had to do. I didn't like having to bring a girl home by 10 o'clock. I hated that. I wanted to go out somewhere and smooch. That means kiss, not anything else. I had to do that. I didn't like it one bit. Well, believe me, my smooching days are long since over. And I got one thing on my mind. Teaching the truth, trying to apply it to my own life, and by the grace of God, trying to get every one of you, and myself included, to think about the consequences of our lives right here. I had a teaching school named David Robbins. He used to always say, people would ask if there's a test coming up. And they'd say, Brother Robinson, is that going to be on the test, and how much does that count? They'd say, how much does it count? He said, everything counts. And every time you'd ask a question, I'd always say, everything counts. Well, everything counts. Sunday school pen. Faithful attendance for 50 years. Yay! And during that 50 years, you caused more trouble in the church than you were worth. You talked about other people behind their backs. And you damaged the church more than you helped it. But you came. What about your motives? What about your thought process? Is Jesus real? Is he who he claims to be? And his rest shall be glorious. I can't wait for this. I just can't wait. I may get less reward than anybody else, but at least I won't have any more responsibility. I won't be responsible for you. I won't be responsible for this church. I won't have all the inward conflict and things that go on inside me. This is the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life. Everything else was always clear cut. But when God calls you into the ministry, you can't do it by force. You just have to do it by preaching and teaching and enduring the individual personalities of each individual church member And they can't understand why you can't just accept them and do for them and treat them like you treat everybody else. Pastor, church, the most impossible thing I've ever done in my life. I'd a lot rather been out having somebody shooting at me in Vietnam, if you want to know the truth. I love you. I care for you. But it's the most difficult thing I've ever done, because you never know what's going to pop up out of the jack-in-the-box next. Matthew 11:29. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. You know why I'm here tonight? It's not because of your charming personality. Oh, I think you do have charming personalities, and I do love you, and I really do care for you, so don't get the impression I'm some type of an ogre that doesn't have any interest in you. I don't love you. I do. But why am I here tonight? Well, when I was 23 years old, I put my neck in a double yoke like oxen pull, and Christ was in the other one. My goodness gracious, from age 23 to 38, I'm surprised the Lord just didn't pull his head out of that other yoke and said, just go your way. But he didn't do it. Starting at age 38, I started to learn about him. And I started to learn what's wrong with me. It's the same thing that's wrong with you. It's the same thing that's wrong with you. You are self-centered. You say, are you talking to me, Brother Shipley? Yes, Brother Shipley, I'm talking to you. I'm talking to everybody in this church. We are all self-centered. We care about our own lives, and don't you dare get in my way. Don't you tell me that I can't do this. I know what's best. I. Forget the fact that you're my mother or my father. Forget the fact that you're my pastor. Forget that. I know what's best. 73 years on this planet, been through 2 wars, raised 7 children, and you don't think I might have at least an inkling of what's best for you? Your mother carried you in her womb all that time. Don't you think she might know what's best for you? And learn of me, for I am meek and lowly, and you shall find rest unto your souls. You want a really turbulent life? Then go ahead and do not pay any attention to God's commandments. Don't pay any attention to what God's rules say. Don't pay any attention to anybody except yourself. I'm talking to old, middle-aged, young, and in between. Just do it your own way, and you'll be miserable. I was absolutely, utterly, completely miserable from the time I was a teenager until I was 38 years old. And I did it my way. Me. Didn't I, MC? I didn't pay attention to what she wanted. It was what I wanted. Wasn't what she wanted. I wanted. She went along with it. She seemed happy. You know why she seemed happy? Because she was meek and lowly in heart. And I wasn't. And she had rest into her soul. You wonder why all her sisters call her? You wonder why I love her so much? She's a far better Christian than I'll ever be. She really is meek and lowly in heart. And I've learned. I've learned from Christ that lives in her. The truth of the matter is, you can mess up your own life. You get saved. Your parents make you go to church. And just as soon as you can possibly break the yoke, you go out on your own. I did. You hear me talk about my grandparents, how wonderful they were? I didn't realize how wonderful they were until after I just broke the yoke and went my own way. You talk about how much I love my mother? You think I always did what she told me? No. I did what I wanted. I wanted. So why am I telling you this now? Because I love you. Because I care for you. I didn't have any intention of preaching this like I'm preaching it. I had no intention whatsoever. I was going to just take this and present it to you and talk to you about rest and everything. But you can't find a rest until your soul until you submit to the Lord. Your problem, my problem, every one of our problems. We are too blinking self-centered. We don't care about the happiness of others.
We don't care about the happiness of others. We only care about our own happiness. And because that's all we care about, we rate everybody on whether or not they let us have our way, the way we think, the way it ought to be, and we end up in all kind of terrible, terrible messes. And then who do we blame? The people that tried to get you to do what was right because they loved you. Well, I learned it the hard way, and I have found rest into my soul. The Lord indicated something to the first New Testament church. John 14, 1 through 3. Okay, so you're saved. Are you saved? So you're scripturally baptized. Are you scripturally baptized? Okay, you're a member of one of the Lord's churches. Are you a member of this church? Okay. In John 14, 1 through 3, every single one of those men to whom he spoke those words were the first New Testament church. Every one of them, Judas Iscariot, had gone. There they were, 11 of them. He said, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions, many dwelling places, many abodes. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. Well, then again, you finally got your nice house over here, two stories. You got a nice nest and a home on the ground. Most of you sitting here have bought homes. Most of you have got a place to live. And that's great. That's wonderful. He said, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Imogene, as much as I love you, I'd rather be with him. And I hope you feel the same way. And I hope we both end up with him in the new city. And I hope we have a relationship that goes on forever and ever. But you know what most people are interested in? When we got married, what were we interested in? Each other. What was? I mean, it's pretty exciting, wasn't it? Boy, it was good. It was fun, wasn't it? Going out and smooching. It was great. I mean, it was wonderful. The relationship we had, it was terrific. But what about Jesus? What about Jesus? Norma's got a grandson. What about Jesus? I mean, do you really want to be where he is? Do you really want to be in the same city with him in the millennial reign and in the heaven age? Is everything I've said so far distant from you that you're just wondering, when is he going to shut up? That's the craziest stuff I ever heard. You know why it's crazy? Because you don't believe the Word of God. And you're more interested in your own self and the pleasure you can get here in this life than you are in the life to come. You don't believe this. You don't believe it. That's a pretty hard pill to swallow. Brother Charles Trustee, would you dismiss it?